Hey, Anna. Remember that time we answered Ireland's call?
Historical podcast. I'm your host, Anna Webb.
And I'm your host, Amanda Webb. And this is a podcast where two sisters totally geek out on all their favorite moments in history.
Woo! Your chair is really squeaky. And it was making me laugh.
Yep. Seconds before we started, I leaned back a fraction.
Yeah.
And just squeaked.
I wasn't really ready for the. We were like being quiet for background noise and you like
squeaked.
Yeah. It made me laugh.
Yeah.
We're in the same place.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Celebrating Amanda's birthday.
Yes, indeed.
And St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, always.
We're home.
Yep.
Slancha.
Slancha. Well, hold on now.
Oh, perfect for a drink update.
Yes.
Slancha. Clink, clink. I'm having coffee.
I'm drinking water. Wow. Speed round.
Speed round. That's
speed round
right.
Our we drink went quick. Update.
Well, I'm still drinking my coffee from earlier this morning.
Yeah.
It's been a slow roll this morning.
Yeah.
So.
Well, since it is St. Patrick's Day, I suppose the day before this episode is due to come out.
Yeah, the episode will come out the day after St. Patty's.
We're talking about Irish revolutionary Michael Collins.
I love it.
Yes.
Let's do it.
We've talked about the Easter Rising before, so actually some of this information will be a little bit redundant, but not all of it, because really the bulk of Michael's work happens after the Rising, not before.
Right.
So we're going to be talking all about him. Tragic, fascinating figure.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
All right. So.
You got to move in the squeaky chair.
Yeah, I got to adjust. All right. Michael Collins. Oh, my voice. What's happening?
I don't know.
I on Thursday in class, had to like speed run my lesson because I had a lot of stuff like packed in. So I was talking a lot. Very fast, and I feel like my voice has not, like,
recovered.
Anyway.
Sorry.
All's well. So.
We're on a roll.
We're crushing
three
it.
Episodes straight, we all sound terrible. Four, because you sounded bad the week before
I
got
sick. Yeah, that's right, because I was sick. I love it here. All right. So Michael Collins is born on October 16th, 1890, near Roscarbery, County Cork, to Michael Collins, Sr., his father, and Mary Ann O'Brien. He is the youngest of eight children.
That's a lot of children.
And three boys. His father was 60 and his mother was 23 when they got married.
Cool. Fun.
Yeah, cool. Unfortunate. which means that his dad was 75 when he was born.
It's wild.
Yeah, so his dad dies when he's 6 years old. So he didn't know his father very well because, you know.
Yep. I got it.
Circumstances. Oh, I'm also off the top. Big old apology. A lot of Gaelic in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I know how to say a lot of it, but there's some of it that I don't.
We're not well versed in pronunciation of the Irish language.
Yeah. I know a lot of it because a lot of it is related to the Rising, and I know a lot of that. But I don't know all of it, and I apologize in advance.
We don't speak it.
So. No. His father and a lot of the men that are around him during his childhood are members of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, which is like a secret organization. But that also just means that he's like surrounded by Irish nationalists his whole childhood.
Sure.
So that is instilled in him in a very young age. Like he's basically born a nationalist.
Right.
Yeah. Because he's born when Ireland is still under British rule. So when he's 13, he attends Clonakilty, I think, National School, which is just, you know, outside of where he actually lives. So he stays with one of his sisters and her husband during the weeks, and then he returns home on the weekends.
Sure.
And his sister's husband runs a newspaper called the West Cork People. So he, like, helps him run the newspaper
he's
there. And in 1906, when he's 15, he leaves school and moves to London with another sister. And he starts working as a clerk in a post office there.
Mm-hmm.
And he does several different jobs while he's in London, but he lives there for about 9 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. While he's there, he joins the Gaelic Athletic Association, which was a big deal. This was like a thing.
Right.
Because in this period, there was a lot of erasure of the Gaelic culture. And so there were, like...
Cultures.
Yeah. 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 In Ireland, specifically.
Well, yeah.
And so there were these, like, two major movements to preserve it. Mm-hmm. And one was athletic sports.
Sure.
And the other was language and arts.
Right,
and we talked a lot about that when we talked about Constance Markovich and Eva Gore Booth.
Right, yeah.
Because Con was a part of the language and arts movement.
Yes.
Yeah, so he gets involved in this through this athletic sports movement.
Sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is when he becomes an official member of the IRB, because many members of the GAA are IRB members, and so that he meets a lot of them, and he joins. He becomes the treasurer for the IRB in London and South England chapters.
Sure.
And this is where he starts to do a lot of his work as a nationalist. Mm-hmm. He returns to Ireland in January of 1916 to help with some of the planning for the 1916 Easter Rising. He's like the secretary for James Connolly's father, who was a big organizer, yeah. And then during the actual Easter Rising, he participates, and he's the aide-de-camp for Joseph Plunkett while they occupy the general post office in Dublin.
Ah.
So going back to our episode on the Easter Rising, that was the first building they took, the most important central location that was held during the Rising. All organization came out of that building.
Yeah.
So aide-de-camp at that building.
Important job.
He was a runner. He was controlling supply lines. Like, he did a lot of really important work during the Rising.
Right.
So, obviously, he's arrested, along with several other key leaders at the end of the Rising. And he eventually gets transferred to Frongroch, I think?
Sure.
Internment camp in Wales.
Oh, Welsh is even harder.
Yeah. he returned to Ireland when the prison camp closed in December of 1916. I didn't find a lot of details about, like, why he was released. I think it was just
probably
that the
just
camp closed.
Probably just
because it closed. And they were like, all right. See y'all later.
Well, yeah, it was probably overcrowded to begin with. And if it, you know, he wasn't one of the big names at the time that, like, politically they would want to keep
in prison. He knew a lot, but they, like, didn't know that he knew a lot because he wasn't one of the major players.
The public had no concept of it. So what does the government care if the public doesn't know who you are yet? Right.
I only saw this story in one place, so I don't 100% know how truthful it is, but I thought it was so interesting. So they screened all those prisoners, right? And apparently during his screening, they wanted to select him for further interrogation and, like, harsher treatment because he clearly knew a lot. And apparently he, like, overheard some guards talking about that and, like, heard that his name...
Oh, the fact that they were going to pull him out.
Yeah, heard that his name was going to be called. So he just, like, went to the other side of the building and accidentally got in the group that got transferred to Wales. And that's, like, he escaped.
That's how he got there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
He, like, escaped
so
harsher treatment by just, like, going with another group of prisoners. Yeah.
Place.
Yeah. He just walked with the wrong group of prisoners to where he was supposed to go. And that's how he, like, survived. Because most of the other prisoners who went and for further interrogation were the people who got executed.
Right.
Who
went
to Kilmainham and got executed.
That's
so
wild.
Like, he escaped. That
what
and,
luck that he overheard it.
Yeah,
wow.
Then, you know, becomes this major player. So
wow.
After the Rising, that, you know, a lot of people were like, "Oh, this insurrection, whatever." The Rising was step one. It was always supposed to
be. Oh, step absolutely.
One. This is where the actual work begins to establish the Republic.
A
of
lot of
Ireland.
People on the other side thought that they had fully failed because the Rising wasn't the end all be all.
Right.
But they never planned for it to be the end all be all because revolutionaries know.
Yes.
It's incremental.
Well,
it can never just be the one incident.
Yes.
There have to be other.
Here's the whole bit. There had been many Risings in Ireland's history. The Easter Rising is not the only.
Right.
Most of them last for very few days and are squashed and we all move on.
Sure.
The goal...
Because who has the army?
Right.
Not them.
The goal of this Rising was not for it to be the start of the Republic. It was for them to hold Dublin for long enough to be considered viable for like a coup attempt, essentially.
Well, and
like,
also to, like, have, to have leverage. Like, there are... When you plan something like that, it's like there are multiple outcomes, right? It's like, okay, we could take this path. where we actually get everything we want. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we take this path where it's like, okay, well, now people are, like, taking us more seriously and we can take things to the table and mm-hmm. have a conversation. So it just depends.
And there's, like, some...
They plan for all these contingencies.
There's right? some political definition that I don't, like, really fully know or understand of how a revolution like that works, where if it occurs over a certain number of days, it then, like, allows something else to happen. Sure. You know what I mean? So a lot of work starts happening after
the Rising.
The Rising. Yeah. So he starts working with Arthur Griffith and the Sinn Féin.
Sinn Féin.
Yeah. Political group.
Yeah.
So
I think it's Sinn Féin.
I think. It was like an umbrella group that united a lot of these different factions. Yes.
Yeah.
Like the Irish Republican Army and the IRB mm-hmm. and like all these different groups came together under Sinn Féin. In 1918, a general election is held for because they're still a part of England.
Right. Yeah.
And that means that they get constituents sent to Parliament.
Some.
Yes.
yeah.
So there is a general election and lots of Sinn Féin members
yeah.
are elected. Tons of them gain seats, including Michael, who becomes the MP for South Cork for his home county.
Right.
So a ton of these members say, we refuse to take our seats in Westminster.
Right.
We are not going to go to England to represent Ireland.
We're not
going to
legitimize your colonization mm-hmm. of us, basically.
We are going to set up our own Irish parliament in Dublin.
Right.
So.
I'm sorry. I had to look up the pronunciation of Sinn Féin to make sure I was getting that right. And I was.
The SH was there. Yeah, Sinn Féin. Yeah, so they basically say, like, oh, we were elected by our people.
So we're going to run our government people.
Here.
Right.
We're going to run
right.
our government here. England hates this, yeah, obviously. Of course. They're getting set. They're all getting set up and getting ready for this, right? Just before the first time they meet, Michael and several of his spies, because he did a lot of espionage work during mm-hmm. the during and before the Rising, get word that the British are going to attempt to arrest a bunch of the new MPs before they can convene.
Right.
Because they know that they are refusing their seats at Westminster, which yeah. is an illegal action. And so they're going to send police officers to arrest the most important players.
Yeah.
So that way they can't convene. Like, they don't yeah. have enough people to do what they want to do in Dublin. And a lot of people tell him, like, okay, then we'll get arrested. Because right. then that'll constitute a coup attempt.
Right.
Like, we're going to yeah. be, like,
that
legally.
Will fire people yep. up and, yeah.
But he decides to hide out. Because he's...
It seems to be his thing.
Yeah.
So, and like, he's, like, worked before.
Yeah.
yeah.
And a lot of his... Some of his other colleagues hide out as well, but yeah. many ignore him. And they get arrested, including a very important player mm-hmm. in all of this. Eamon de Valera.
Yeah.
Who is... We're going to hear his name a lot. He is hugely important to all of this. Mm-hmm. This I found very interesting. Mm-hmm. Apparently, when he was hiding out, he spent some time hiding with Dublin's Jewish community.
Ah.
He posed as an Orthodox Jew for, like, a period of time. Interesting. And I thought this was a funny little tidbit. And once cursed the Black and Tans in Yiddish, which is hilarious. The Black and Tans are one of the British police yes. factions that will pop up throughout our story.
Right.
So, on January 21st, 1919, the Dáil Éireann mm-hmm. meet for the first time. That's the Irish Parliament.
Right.
And they declare the Republic of Ireland at this meeting.
Right.
So, they say, we are setting up our own parliament here, and mm-hmm. we are declaring ourselves a republic. And yeah. so, this action is the official beginning of the Irish War for Independence.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, if you think back to, like, the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. Our Continental Congress
thank you. Yes, I
becomes
come to me.
The declaration of our own government.
Yes. Yeah. Know? So there was a declaration of independence that was circulated throughout the Rising.
No, but this is them saying we have a government.
A body. We have a governmental body. Yeah. Body. Yes, exactly. just very shortly after this, a couple months later, Michael helps de Valera escape jail. And
this is why you need people on the outside,
yes.
too.
And he then gets... elected as the president of the Dáil Éireann.
Right.
So that means he's the president of the Irish Parliament. Over time, he starts to take the title of President of the Irish Republic.
Yeah.
He preferred that title over President of the
Parliament.
Which, outside of the it being illegal that they had their own parliament, under the British system and everything, he was elected by the parliamentary members to be the President of the Parliament.
Right,
so that was all above board.
Sure.
It was just that whenever they start later negotiations with Britain, he wanted them to recognize him as the President of the Republic.
Right, but they didn't recognize the Republic, so they weren't going to do that.
Exactly. Another little tidbit that I thought was really interesting. No other body gave recognition to the Irish Republic during this time.
Yeah.
De Valera actually went to the Paris Peace Conference in 1919 and lobbied the Irish American population to try and get America to recognize Ireland.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of time in America working with Irish Americans for money.
To try to organize.
Yeah, because he was like, oh, you guys know the struggle of a revolutionary movement.
Yeah.
And so many Irish people had moved to America that there was a large supportive population in the country.
Yeah.
But it just never gains enough traction.
They didn't have a lot of power. There's a large, you know, like you said, a big community that could try and lobby. They just didn't have that much pull.
Mm-mm.
Didn't have much power in America at the time.
So under the new republic, Michael becomes the Minister of Home Affairs and the Minister of Finance. And this is a big thing because he helps to create something called the National Loan. And the National Loan completely funds the War of Independence.
Yeah.
This is how they get all of their weapons and everything. So they raise 400,000 pounds in 1919 money. That's cash money. I thought this was interesting. Apparently, 25,000 pounds of which was in gold.
Oh my God. Okay.
Which is like, okay, great. You know, the British say that this is illegal because it is.
To them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
To the Irish people, the British being in their country is illegal.
So it's the money is like spread all over. One member of this Irish government like hid the gold under his floorboards for years. Russia, who has just recently gone through a socialist revolution, which is what Ireland is attempting to do here, funded some of the national loan. There's like they offered up like jewels as like some of the money, and that was apparently like hid under floorboards for years and years and years.
Yeah, they had, like, looted all of the palaces and stuff.
Right, so
Russia,
that was, like, the way that they had money. I just thought that was all very interesting. Okay, so the Irish Republican Army, or the IRA, becomes the official army of the Irish Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael is made the Director of Intelligence.
Yeah,
through
all
of this.
He's already got experience.
He is a spy through and through.
He wants a spy. Always a spy. Forever.
Spies are forever.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. So he spends a lot of time organizing the IRA into an actual military force because there's a lot of volunteers.
Yeah, otherwise they're a really unorganized militia, basically. And if you're going to fight the British Army, you need a little bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that in America from, you know, our history.
Yes, indeed. So he spends a lot of time, like, getting the British police out of barracks, getting their weapons, using that for the effort. He does not want this to be an all-out war.
Sure.
He subscribes to guerrilla warfare, right? So we come in, we hit really hard,
we pull out.
Yeah. Yep. That's very much. And so he's very big into minimizing losses, maximizing effectiveness.
Sure. Well, they don't have the numbers to sustain.
No way.
Nor the funds.
Yeah.
Nor the weapons.
And they're fighting the British.
Right.
Which is one of the largest.
It's kind of their thing to sustain.
Yes. Largest armies in the world.
Usually outlast.
Yes.
Which I personally believe they learned from us outlasting them in the American Revolution.
Yeah. So he's very strategic in the places that he chooses. Like he wants to minimize as much loss as possible, and he wants to make the British hurt the most. Like, that's the goal.
Right. And to minimize the damage to their own
army,
land and mm-hmm. army, because, look, if you actually care about the land you believe you're defending,
mm-hmm.
you don't destroy it.
Right. Right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Maybe it's maybe something we could all think about
mm-hmm.
in general.
Yes. He also creates this group that becomes known as the Squad.
Squad.
Who are, like, his top assassins.
Oh.
And their job...
It seems like they could have gotten a better name.
Yeah, yeah. They are assassinating high-profile British targets. Like,
right,
that's
okay,
the goal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This leads to an event in 1920 where the Squad assassinates several British agents in a coordinated attack.
Right.
So,
yeah.
like, all at once, knocking on doors... Many people are eliminated.
Yeah, they would just show up to their homes.
And just shoot them and leave.
This is wild.
Mm-hmm. So there's this mass, happens all at once, coordinated attack to assassinate several of these British agents. And, you know, Britain freaks out and the British mm-hmm. agents respond. And in one occurrence on this day, the British police officers go to an Irish football match
yeah.
looking for IRA agents and open fire on yeah. the crowd. It kills six, or wounds 60 and kills 12. And this is one of many events known as Bloody Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not the Bloody Sunday associated with the Troubles. That's a different,
yeah,
it's the exact same situation, but a different Bloody Sunday.
And then there's a Bloody Sunday in the Russian Revolution
yes, there
as
is.
Well. So.
There's a Bloody Sunday. Oh, I talked about it. What was that? I just talked about it with my kids.
There are several. That's
yeah,
all
they're all saying. They're everywhere all the time. Because of all of this, the British police have a price of £10,000 on Michael's head through this whole
right,
cause time.
Right, because they know he sent them.
Yes. And even before this, because
well,
he
yeah,
is,
they know he's doing the organizing.
Yeah,
and...
he is the one right. who is doing all of this work, coordinating all of this work. So, it's getting rough out here for the Irish.
Yeah.
And it's getting rough out here for the British, too.
Yes, it is.
Like, no lie, they're hurting. So, in July of 1921, the British government offers a truce and to start peace talks.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because the British government was getting a lot of pressure to do this.
Yeah, well, they were spending a lot of money on mm-hmm. this.
And you have to remember, contextually, this is right after the end of World War I.
Right, yeah.
So, World War I happens. The Easter Rising happened while World War I was happening.
Right.
The Irish War of Independence starts literally the year after World War I
right.
ends. So, the British army is hurting.
Yeah. And they again, the like the country has already lost a lot of money on a war
mm-hmm.
and now they're spending a lot of money on another war.
Yeah. So, even though most people were like, "No, Ireland's ours." Like they also did not want to be in war anymore.
No.
So there was a lot of pressure on the British government.
Right.
So they offer
and also,
a truce.
At this point, we're starting to see signs that another war could be approaching. A little
mm-hmm.
bit. It's starting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's still really scared from
mm-hmm.
World War I. So there's a lot of public unrest for sure.
Through these talks, the Irish position is that, you know, there's no compromise or negotiations with the British government until we're recognized as an independent republic.
Sure. They know what they want.
Right. However, it is very clear from the start that the British say, that's not on the table.
Yeah.
But that's not what the public is being told.
Right.
In private talks, when this all begins, they are essentially told, that is not on the table, but we want to stop fighting, so let's figure something else out.
Right.
Nobody else gets to hear this.
Right, yeah.
So there's a lot of dishonesty from the Irish leadership to the Irish people about
right,
this.
Right, right.
So De Valera starts the peace talks as the president of the Irish Republic.
Right.
Right. But then when they are ready to start the treaty negotiations, he decides, rather than doing it himself, to send a delegation.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it all starts to
yeah,
fall
it breaks
apart.
Pretty bad.
So he sends several people, but two of the major people he sends are Michael Collins
right.
and Arthur Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
They have full authority to sign an agreement on behalf of the Dáil government, of
right.
the Irish Parliament. But then the next thought is that the treaty then goes back to the Dáil for full approval.
Right, yeah.
And they're supposed to be communicating with them the whole time about the conditions so that it can
sure.
be edited before it's signed,
right.
essentially. Michael was told by several people that he was being set up as a scapegoat.
Sure, of
like,
course.
He is, he at this point, he's not a politician. He is a military man.
Right.
He is the head of their intelligence.
He's a target for the British government.
Yes.
Yeah.
De Valera should have been running these talks.
Of course.
Arthur Griffin is the vice president, so, like, he that has reason to be there.
Right.
But Michael is very much being sent over there as a scapegoat.
Absolutely.
And it is very clear from the start, and it's very clear from here on out that that's what happened
right.
to him.
Because the Irish public, like you said, doesn't really know what's going into these negotiations. So they don't know that what's being talked about is the possibility that they are not going to get what they want.
Right.
The Irish people have no idea that that's even mm-hmm. an option. So the president of the Irish Republic needs, when that doesn't happen, mm-hmm. inevitably, because mm-hmm. like you said, it's not on the table for the British, he needs someone to say, oh, well, he signed the treaty.
It was very strategic on his part.
I didn't know.
To not go.
Which is wild to me, because it's like, okay, but you're still the president, though, uh-huh. right?
Well, because this was the problem. Even amongst the treaty delegation, they were all being told different things.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't sign it without this, that, and the other. It's okay if we accept that. They're all being told mm-hmm. different information, so they're struggling to properly negotiate the treaty because they're not getting full information.
Right, and you know, I think, and I don't know if you're going to get to this, but what I believe happened here, and the reason that I believe he chose Michael Collins is because I think he did not agree with Michael's guerrilla warfare tactics.
There's a little bit of
and
that,
he
yeah.
he was probably more willing to have an all-out war and kind of thought, well, when it fails and we can blame this person who was running the war mm-hmm. in a way that I didn't like, mm-hmm. now I can do it my mm-hmm. way and everybody will rise up and, you know, we'll take down the British this
right.
way.
Right.
That's what I feel.
I think there's probably
other
that,
political
yeah.
parts, but I think ultimately, like,
that's part of it.
What's the motivation for picking him specifically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could have had other scapegoats. You could have put it in someone who was even less experienced than this. Mm-hmm. There has to be a reason you picked him, right? Mm-hmm.
So, through this whole process, the treaty delegation agrees that they are not going to sign the treaty until they can take it back to the Dáil cabinet to ratify it first.
Okay.
Or to, at the very least, edit it, see it and edit it, right? So they, you know, meet with the cabinet in Dublin and they have this treaty, right? And they go back and the Dáil get to look at it. They come back. And when they're in London, they are told by the Prime Minister, you have to sign this immediately today. If you do not sign it now, this will begin,
null and void,
quote, an immediate and terrible war that will start the next day.
Yeah.
So they sign it under extreme pressure from the British government before the Irish get to look at it and vote on it. So they have stuff in there that they don't want to keep,
sure.
but that they also know there's no way around it. So they want the Dáil to be able to look at it at least before they sign it so they know what we're all getting into.
Yeah.
And the British government basically says, no, you're not allowed.
Yeah.
So, this eventually becomes the Anglo-Irish Treaty.
Yep.
It's signed on December 6, 1921 at, like, 2 in the morning. Because they get back and they're told, like, sign it now.
Yeah.
This agreement gives dominion status to the Irish Free State.
Yeah.
And it's basically modeled after Canada, right?
Right.
How Canada was technically a commonwealth of the British Empire, but it functioned.
It has its own government.
It has its entirely its own government, its own military, its own constitution. It just still is under.
Its own currency.
Yep. It is just still under the oath to king and country.
Yeah. They still are.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a compromise between a full independent republic and a province of the empire.
Right.
That was like what ended up happening. It also pretty much solidifies the partition of Ireland.
Yeah.
Because there's a thing in the treaty that says, like, the 6 counties of Northern Ireland who are unionists, who still believe in the... Who want to stay with Britain. That they can opt out of the treaty, and they do, like, pretty much immediately.
Right.
So they stay separate from the Irish Free State. Now, there's a lot of fighting that goes on there.
That's a whole other thing.
That's round one of the Irish Troubles.
Yeah.
One of two.
Right, yeah.
That's another episode entirely. Michael Collins is involved in some of that, but I don't have time for all of that right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that all happens.
Right.
Not what everybody wanted.
No.
Not what everybody wanted. When he signs the treaty, when Michael signs the treaty, his official statement is thus. I say that rejection of the treaty is a declaration of war until you have beaten the British Empire, apart from any alternative document. Rejection of the treaty means your national policy is war. The treaty was signed by me not because they held up the alternative of immediate war. I signed it because I would not be one of those to commit the Irish people to war without the Irish people committing themselves to war.
Right. He's basically saying they threatened war, and I wasn't going to do that without y'all's consent to war. Right.
He also said it didn't offer freedom to Ireland. It says, so he said, not the freedom that all nations desire and develop to, but the freedom to achieve it. He believes
it's the first step,
that this is step one to becoming free Ireland. That isn't years and years and years and years of war with the British Empire. If we do this now, we can begin the negotiations to separate from them eventually.
And we can work on our own in our own way with our own government. Mm-hmm.
And for somebody who at the time did not think of himself as a very political mind.
Well, so he wasn't.
Not a bad political move.
No, I mean, for someone who's not that experienced and who was under extreme pressure.
Yeah.
And I think the statement is smart to say, like, look, I get it. It's not good.
But I'm not going to
like
war without
either,
y'all.
But yeah.
Privately, he has been quoted as saying that when he signed the treaty, he signed his death warrant.
Yeah, sure.
That was it.
Well, and he knew that was coming.
Because
he knew he was the scapegoat.
Yep.
Before any of this even happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when they get back, Davalra is like, well, I'm not signing that.
Right.
You guys didn't do what I told you to do.
She's like,
you didn't tell us to do anything, bud.
We did literally what you told us to do, which is sign it if we feel like we should sign it.
So he objects to the treaty on the grounds that it had been signed without cabinet consent, which they had not been allowed to do, and that it didn't have Irish independence or Irish unity. Those were the two big points. Was the Republic and Northern Ireland.
Yep. He knew that wasn't going to happen. This is what I'm saying. He knew that wasn't going to happen. And he knew that if somebody else signed something that didn't include those two major points, that he could say,
well, I wasn't there for
I'm the one that's on y'all's side. And now, I don't know what we do. I guess we just take whatever action you guys see fit, right? Like, crazy.
Yeah. Now, there is the big thing that most people oppose in this treaty. Yeah. There were a lot of people who were like, okay, we're the free state, that's fine. But the big point of contention for almost everybody was that in the treaty is an oath of allegiance to the British crown.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
And there people did not want that. They were like, okay, we can be the free state, but
I'm not going to call myself a citizen of Britain and a subject of the
I am not
king.
Pledging my oath to the crown.
Right.
Which is like, of course Britain's going to put that in there. But also, of course the people are going to be upset about that. So there's no winning here. So basically, the Dáil Éireann puts Michael in a really bad spot. The British government puts him in a really bad spot. Now he's the bad guy no matter what he does.
Yep, 100%. Right?
So they come home. The cabinet does vote to accept the treaty, minus Davalra. He's the only one who votes against it.
Oh, interesting.
And then the Dáil Éireann also has to vote to ratify the treaty. And they just barely accept it with a vote of 64 to 57.
Wow.
It's a very, very
tight.
They
didn't want war either.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
But then Davalra is like, okay, well, everybody who's against the treaty
is against me.
We're not going to do this. And he splits the government.
Right, okay.
He says, we're all going to leave. We're not doing this.
Okay.
So.
But it's like, okay.
Yep.
So then you could have just gone and done the negotiations yourself.
Yep.
I don't know. Just a thought.
So he resigns the presidency. And then through the next round of voting, seeks re-election because he has now reformed this idea that we are
faction.
We're Sinn Féin anti-treaty. Y'all are Sinn Féin pro-treaty. So everybody's running as Sinn Féin.
Yeah, right.
But then there's
pro
and anti-treaty.
Nobody wants to give up that name.
Exactly.
Because it means of ourselves or something along those lines. So it is very,
tied to the whole thing.
Yes, to Irish nationalism.
So he tries for re-election whenever they have this first formal election, but Arthur Griffin replaces him. Griffith chooses his title as president of the Dali Éireann instead of president as the Republic of the Republic, because he is trying to set up this provisional government.
Well, and he's also trying to really separate himself at this point
from that whole situation. Yeah. So the Dali Éireann is the government that exists in Ireland when this all begins, right?
Yeah.
But the British does not. The British government does not recognize it as the official government because it's unconstitutional to Britain. So part of the treaty is that they have to form a new government. Yeah. They can't just keep using the Dali Éireann.
Yeah.
So now they're going to set up a provisional government, and the Dali Éireann is supposed to be helping to establish the provisional government.
Right.
And this is really where that split happens.
Yeah.
Everybody who is pro-treaty goes into the provisional government. Everyone who is anti-treaty, they're all still the Dali Éireann, but they're saying, we don't want to participate in the provisional government.
Right, because they think that their government is the legitimate
one. Yeah. So the Dali Éireann still exists, but the pro-treaty side is helping to establish the provisional government.
Yeah.
And so when the provisional government forms, Michael Collins is chosen as the chairman of the cabinet, which is basically the prime minister.
Right, yeah.
He is now the leader.
The most powerful person in
that
government.
Of the provisional government.
Right.
He hates this, but this is where he's at, right? So he becomes, you know, the chairman of the cabinet. He also stays the minister of finance.
Mm-hmm.
And they start work, right? Through all of this, Michael is also a major member of the IRA because he was helping to run the military during the War of Independence. So the IRA also splits into pro and anti-treaty groups.
Yeah.
And
it's so wild. Sorry. I just want to break down all the splits we've got going so far, because we've got the Irish split from Britain, and then we've got the Irish internal split, north and south, and then we've got
the governmental
the
split.
State split.
Yes. Yeah, this is...
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with this, is that through the treaty negotiations, the IRA was supposed to develop into the official army of Ireland.
Right.
And so... Both of these groups have the legal
they
right to
the
act.
They are the IRA, both of them. Yeah.
So they all have the legal right to act. They can walk into any whatever and take weapons and it be legally okay.
Right.
So that's an issue.
Uh-huh.
So on April 14th, 1922, the anti-treaty faction starts occupying the four courts in Dublin.
Yeah.
It's just a little area where the four most important courthouses in Ireland and then in the city of Dublin are all together. So it's a
which
big...
is like, I don't know that that was smart planning.
No, I mean, it's a big legal seat. Like,
we could have spread them out physically is all I'm saying.
So some people think that the provisional government needs to respond to this right away. Michael is very resistant to this because
he doesn't want it to escalate.
There's two things here, right? Yeah. He, A, does not want to attack the IRA members because he worked with that anti-treaty group are the most extreme people that he worked with directly.
Well, and like you said, they are also legally the army, so it would be seen as an attack on his own army.
Right. So
technically,
he also thinks that a military response is going to immediately spark civil war.
Of course.
Before they've had any time to set up the government.
Right.
So he doesn't want to respond right away. So instead, he takes no action to the public, right? Everybody thinks, and the British, too, thinks that he's just letting them have it.
Yeah.
What he's doing is using his secret organization... the IRB, to start to work to reunify the IRA.
Right.
So they're working behind the scenes to try and reunify the IRA. Now, it doesn't work. But, like, that's what he's doing.
Sure,
he is doing something through all of this. He also is helping to create the new Constitution of the Free State.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this idea that he is going, that in the Constitution, it will have no mention of the British king.
Ah, okay.
So, the treaty, all of that, yes, great. Oath of allegiance to Britain. But, if in our constitution we just don't mention him, the people, the anti-treaty members of the government, are going to be more willing to work under that constitution than they are under the treaty.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Well, and he got the British a little bit
there.
Because they didn't put anything in their treaty that said, and also, you can't write a constitution... that excludes us.
But here's the problem. They did say that the British government has to
approve their constitution.
So He's working on all of this. He says, okay, if we don't put an oath to the crown and the constitution, that's going to be really helpful.
Yeah.
He also gets to start working with Del Vera on a pact for the next election cycle. And the idea of this pact is that everyone who's going to run as Sinn Féin is going to run, and they are going to be very open about if they're pro or anti-treaty in their
campaigns.
In their campaigns. And whatever the election yields will, A, tell us the mind of the Irish people, and B, regardless, we will have members of both in the government, and we will all work together under the provisional government after the election.
Yeah.
The agreement is, this will be the Irish people
this
speaking.
This is how we're going to move forward.
And we're going to move forward, regardless of what the result is, we will move forward under the provisional government.
Basically,
if there are more anti-treaty people who get elected, then they'll have a say in the provisional government.
Basically, what he's saying is, this is what we meant by the treaty being the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, y'all want to reject the treaty, okay, but for right now, we're working under it.
So we have to work under it.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
So they're working on this election pact. But then the British veto the constitution. And then the election cycle becomes very contentious.
Yeah.
But they do, they hold these elections under this, and the results are more pro-treaty candidates getting elected than anti-treaty.
Well, the people are tired of it.
Exactly. It's close. The numbers are close, but they have the majority. So they're gonna start working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until this guy, Field Marshal Henry Hughes Wilson, he had been an advisor for the Prime Minister in Northern Ireland. Because there was all, again, in the background of all of this, there's all this stuff going on in Northern Ireland. He's assassinated.
Whoops.
On his doorstep.
Whoops.
By two IRA men.
Yep.
Now, the IRA, the anti-treaty IRA, don't take
credit.
Credit for it, but the fact that they did this is seen like as a...
It's an act of hostility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill, he's been working on this the whole time. So the Prime Minister is Lloyd George.
Yeah.
And Winston Churchill was working on the treaty, whatever. So he assumes that the anti-treaty IRA are responsible for it. And
yeah, because I'll tell you one thing about Churchill. He's just going to decide what happened, though.
Yeah.
He's just going to be like, that's what happened. And he knows what the truth is.
He knows what happened.
He always knows what the truth is. But he also always knows the thing that will benefit him. And he's going to go with that 100% of the time.
And he basically tells Michael, if you don't start to take care of this situation in the four courts, we're going to send in troops.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a worse problem for you.
Right. Which to the Free State signals the end of the Free State.
Right.
If they send
in British troops.
Yeah.
So he's telling him, we've given you time to deal with this situation.
Right.
Now there's been an assassination of one of our people. Yeah. We're going to send in the army because we still have the authority to do it. Like, the British army still has the authority to do it.
Well, yeah, because they're part of the empire still, technically.
So he tells Michael, if you don't take care of this, I'm sending my people in.
Right.
So Michael's hand is forced, essentially.
Of course. Again.
Again, yeah. So by July, Michael has to step down as the chairman of the provisional government so that he can become the commander-in-chief of the National Army to deal with the civil war that has now begun. Because after this, it sparks a movement across the whole country. And essentially, it's like the whole country is occupied by anti-treaty IRA members for like a little bit. And like just a little like section of Dublin and a couple little chunks of other counties have control over.
Right, yeah.
So they lose control pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So now he has to launch this full scale, like, we have to push back against the anti-treaty groups.
Because he has to now publicly kind of say, okay, we know it was them.
But, like, here's what our...
can't allow that to happen.
And here's what our election yielded.
Right.
We are going to be working like this.
Totally, yes.
Like, let's just do it. Right? Like,
well,
that's the situation he finds himself in.
Mm-hmm. You can't slow play it anymore because the British have forced their hand.
He just spends his whole life stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Right?
Like, it's wild. So he does all of that. And there's also, like, he also was also still kind of running the government, which was, like, super illegal.
Look, he's not the first one, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But it is what it is. So it takes a while, but eventually they really wind down the occupation of the anti-treaty groups across Ireland,
okay.
Right? So we're starting to be looking for some peace talks for the end of the Civil War, because now we're in an Irish Civil War. It lasts way, it's a way shorter war, yeah, but it still happens. Though, yeah. Yeah. So on August 22nd, 1922, Michael is in Cork City, in County Cork, meeting with some IRA members there, some neutral members who he's hoping are going to help start these peace negotiations. Sure, yeah. They're traveling through Cork that day, and their group stops very briefly in... Beal na Bláth?
That sounded good.
Thanks, I'm taking it. which is just a small little crossroad, very small town in the middle of County Cork. And an anti-treaty sentry recognizes him and his party. They leave, and the guy who recognizes him sets up an ambush in case they travel back through on their way home. Yeah. There's no guarantee that they will, but he thinks...
He wants to be ready.
He's here. If he comes back, we're going to attack him.
Yeah.
And this is... He was very heavily advised not to go to Cork. Because there were so many people off of his head. There. And he basically said, they're not going to shoot me in my own county.
Yeah, whoops, buddy.
Well, my friend...
I hate to tell you this, man.
That evening, they are traveling through again on their way home, and their party is fired at by the ambush, right? So, most people, like, the driver is like, all right, we're going. And Michael says, no, stop. We'll fight them. There's not that many of them. Because there weren't. There were, like, six of them.
Yeah, but come on.
Yep. He's like, we're going to just fight them off. They get out of the car. They, like, go under an embankment. They fight them off. He is, like, going to get a gun from the car, and it, like, jams on him, and he gets shot in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, he dies very quickly.
Yeah.
He was 31.
Man.
Yeah. I don't know how quickly he died from his wound, but it can't have been very long. There's no official, count.
On the scene, for sure.
Well, it might have been as they were leaving. It's hard to say.
Right.
Now, there is no official version of this story because they never did an official inquiry. And the two sides tell the story very differently. That also means that there's no official, like, this person shot him. It is widely believed that it was Dennis Sonny O'Neill, who had been a British Army sniper in World War I.
Right.
So, like, that's the general agreed upon story is that this is the guy who shot him.
Yeah.
They quickly take Michael and put him back in the car, and they try and... get back to Cork City. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of, like, flooding and bad roads, and they get stuck on the back roads. Eventually, their car gets completely stuck, and they have to carry him back to Cork City.
That's terrible.
They don't do an autopsy, because they know how he died. Exactly,
it's not hard to figure it out.
The body is first presented in a hospital in Cork, and then it's sent to St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, and then he is laid in state at City Hall beside Dublin Castle. He's laid in state for 3 days, and tons, I mean thousands and thousands of people come to see him, including many people who fought against him in this conflict because there was such an extreme respect for him in that country.
And they worked with him before, and also... There's this thing that happens when a figure like this is gone, that all the people fighting against him kind of go, you know what? He was trying to make peace for us.
Yeah.
You know, he was
even when we disagreed with him, he was doing the good work.
He was trying.
Yeah.
He was trying to get us all to come together and figure it out for the good of our country.
Yeah.
So they'll pay their respects. Yeah. You know?
His funeral mass, because he's Catholic, takes place at Dublin St. Mary's Pro Cathedral. A lot of foreign dignitaries come because he, you know, he was the prime minister of the new free state. Yeah. Like, he was a major figure.
And the people
figure.
Who recognized it would come,
About 500,000 people attend his funeral, which at the time was about a fifth of Ireland's population.
Yeah, there's not that many people in Ireland, so
He's buried at Galston Cemetery in Dublin. Another point, I didn't know where to stick this in.
Okay.
At some point between 1921 and 1922, he gets engaged to a woman named Kitty Kiernan, but they weren't married before he died.
And he didn't have any children.
He did not, because, they were planning on getting married, but then he was suddenly Prime Minister of Ireland.
Of Ireland,
There was one more quote I wanted to give of his to end this, and I forgot to put it in the notes, so I'm going to hunt for it real quick. So... Through all of this, he was revered, right? Like, no. People loved him, thought very highly of him, and it was very widely agreed upon that no matter what decision he made, everything he was ever doing was in the interest of the Irish people.
Right, yeah.
In a way that not everybody who was working clearly, during this time
I mean,
was.
Look at the people who sent him to the dogs, right?
Yeah. This is a quote from the Wikipedia, but sometimes they nail it. You know what I mean? It has been justly said that while some were devoted to the idea of Ireland, Colin was a people person whose patriotism was rooted in affection and respect for the people of Ireland around him.
Oh.
Among his famous last words is his final entry in his pocket diary, written on the journey that ended his life. The people are splendid.
Aww. That's
and that's
so
like,
sweet.
I know, it makes me tear up. It's like, kind of considered his last words.
Yeah, sure.
Since that was like what was the last thing written.
Well,
you
the
know?
Last things he was saying were probably shouting instructions at people, so that's not as poetic.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, like he was
that's
just.
Really cool.
And you know, the Civil War ended very shortly after this.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Free State was established, and they worked for several years to become the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
And that work would not have happened without the Free State.
No.
They would not have gotten independence without the Free
they
State.
They would have gone into a massive war with Britain, and Britain probably
that they
would
not
have
won
them.
Because they did not have the ability to.
No.
And, like, all the people who would have been their allies were also recovering from World War One, so they wouldn't have had, like, the Russian Revolution, right?
Well,
like, they wouldn't have had what they
people
needed.
People who would have been their allies might not, like, in any other conflict.
Might not
probably
have.
Wouldn't have wanted to ally with them
against
Britain, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That made it. The pickings were slim.
Yeah.
I guess you could say for allies. So.
I very much believe we would not have a free Ireland today had it not been for the work that Michael Collins did.
No, we definitely wouldn't have.
Yep. That's him.
Very good episode.
Thanks. He's an interesting dude. There's an excellent movie
about
his
about
life.
That.
Called Michael Collins, starring Liam Neeson. it's great. It's Alan Rickman is Devalra, and it's fabulous, and it's a good telling. And I think it tells it's a good telling of his character, I think.
Sure,
like,
it
plays into this, like, reluctant politician, devoted
just
nationalist.
Just trying to keep everybody together.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, that was a really good episode.
Thanks.
I really enjoyed that.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day.
Thank God Ireland's free.
Amen to that. All right, well, there we go.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll do another Irish episode this month. I have no idea
we'll
what
figure it out.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has suggestions for what they want us to talk about next time, we would love to hear them. You can email us at rememberthatpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Threads and Instagram at RTTpod. And Facebook if you want, whatever. We would really love it if you would leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you would like to find me on the internet, I am at The Real Anna Webb.
And I'm at ACW Nerdfighter.
Woohoo! We speed ran this episode because you kind of speed ran the research. Time.
Uh-huh.
They did it. So it just feels like, oh, we're done with it now.
We started and finished this episode in a matter of 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There's been a lot going on. So,
yeah.
We did it.
We did it. And until next time,
remember that time.